The Radio Cafe today is coming to you from the Institute of American Indian Arts. I am sitting at IAIA with several Siberian and Native American poets and writers. There is an event going on called Threads of Kinship, Dialogues with Native Siberian Writers, that's happening right now. And in fact, tomorrow night, Thursday the 15th of April, there's going to be a roundtable discussion with Siberian and Native American writers here at IAIA. I'd like to introduce now Dr. Alexander Vashenko. He is a professor of comparative studies in traditional literatures and cultures. He is a scholar and translator of Native American literature at Lomonosov Moscow State University. And he has been involved with the work of N. Scott Mamede for many years. How did you and Mamede meet?
The events that we are having today seem to me a peak of a long-range series of efforts beginning in 1974, I believe it was, when Scott Mamede first came to Russia as a first Fulbright to Moscow State University. And I was a postgraduate and a student of his while he was giving courses there for a semester. Then, among other things, he expressed his wish that he always wanted to go to Siberia because inside of him, he had the sense, the feeling that his native peoples came from there. It was their ancient mother country, so he was very curious to visit that part of the globe. And yet it did not develop then, but other meetings followed from that one on both sides of the Atlantic, because I understand that he has come to Russia 7 times since. It was not before, I believe, 1984, that he was able to come to Siberia for the first time with a group, joining the group of Navajo students, students of the Navajo College it was, I think. And from that, other things followed, because he got his first acquaintance with the bear feast of the local people, what were these local people, and he was more and more fascinated with that, and so other contacts followed.
So you, having been involved with and followed this whole process, and also having visited both countries and natives here and in Siberia, you're an expert on the literature of indigenous people of Russia. What are the similarities?
The goal of what we, the aim of what we are going to achieve with all these activities is a natives-to-natives direct program, which this world terribly needs and which we are quite often lacking, because there is lots of similarities too. Politicians come and go, business people certainly naturally would do that all the time, but not native writers. Behind native writers stand native cultures, traditions, the whole world of values, which sometimes are a bit different or quite a bit different from the civilization issues and values. So, as we meet, for example, this time, people on both sides mark a lot of similarities indeed, even in the languages, not directly, but how the people greet each other, how the tribal communities are organized into clans, how the poetry is being made, and what the people stand for, how together they can not complain, although they have a lot to complain about sometimes, but how they can celebrate life. And this is very important for the contemporary of the world, I think. It's all about the issues of identity, both sides of the Atlantic, I think. So we keep discovering many, many things that are really revealing to everybody, I think.
The painful side of the similarities is that in the same way that the American government profoundly oppressed the Native American people and put them in boarding schools and destroyed their culture, a similar thing happened on the Soviet side in Russia.
Yes, indeed, you could find some similarities. I would dare say that, nevertheless, we did not have forced removals like the situation was in the 19th century in the United States. Indian wars, we didn't have that. So I would say the Russian move into Siberia was milder, all in all, than it was in the United States. But say, beginning with the Soviet power, sometimes, because before the Soviet power, say, the government was not interested in changing a lot of native structures or values or religious beliefs even. Strange as it may seem, although there were missionaries, of course, and there were Christianization, that sort of thing. But in the Soviet era, because civilization actually came to those areas, there were more direct and sometimes crucial changes among the native societies. The Soviet government tried to force the ideology, or there was sometimes a Russification going on, speaking of literature or poetry, because the standards were brought from the Soviet civilization, I would say. However, these people kept to what was sacred to them and survived.
We're going to hear some of the work of the writers and poets whom we have sitting around the table here at the Institute of American Indian Arts. Dr. Vashenko, what languages are they writing in?
Quite often they write on both languages. Russian, of course, but they make a point, especially speaking of Yuri Velo, Maria Vagatova, and it's more and more so that they are using bilingual editions. They write in both languages. Their native language with Velo, it would be Nenets, or with Maria and Yerime, it would be Hanti.
Why don't we start with Yuri Vaila? Can you introduce him?
Yes, he is a reindeer owner from Varyogan, that's Ob area, Ob River area. And at the time that he mustn't care for the deer, which is all the year round after all, or goes to a conference or somewhere, he is writing poetry and prose about his people and about the world and the man in general, human beings, the way he understands that.
Людей объединяет не крик, людей объединяет молчание.
People are not bound by the shouts. People are bound by the silence. People come close not on holidays. They come together in trouble. People are not quarreled by wars. People are quarreled by getting fat. Humans are weak by nature. There are so many temptations for them, and so rarely one can refuse them.
That was poet Yuri Vaila. We turn now to Maria Vagatova. She is a former journalist and teacher. She's head of the family folk group that performs traditional Hanti events. And she's going to do her piece in the form of a song.
Котиям она нотиям осиман мазмал исиям осиман мазмал эви ею эви ею ёши ено ёжаю маз кури ено кураю маз наян хуюрданан ён сану ханшан веру нан верден Evi ye yo evi ye yo evi ye yo evi ye yo khatve sang ven shiyen tilshve sang ven shiyen mireng wo sho mirene vat alkhali te yo evi ye yo kurtan te do mirene vat alkhanya te yo evi ye 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 yo. Вот такая песенка. Это наказ дочери.
We were just hearing from Maria Vagatova. Tell us about what she was saying, singing, and what language.
That was a Hanti poem of hers. And it is traditional in the sense that it is a dedication of a mother to her daughter, saying, I'm trying to be more or less literal, Now look at you. Your little hands have become big hands. Your legs have become a grown person's legs. So now you should look and find for yourself a man who would be equal to you. And I wish that any kind of ridicule on the part of men, not any kind of ridicule on the part of women would touch you. And I would bless the house that you would build so that the sun would stand over it and the moon would come to it every time.
Is that kind of song used today, for example, for a mother to bless her daughter?
I understand it's traditional that the people would improvise every time in a concrete way. It's concrete daughter, concrete mother would adjust this tradition to her daughter, to the circumstance.
I saw that she was reading from a book, so it's a native language transliterated into Russian alphabet?
No, it's a Hunti alphabet that they made later, adjusting the sounds to the sounds of Hunti language.
I'd like now to introduce Yeremey Aypin. He is a politician in the parliament in Hanti-Mansiysk, and part of his work is protecting local and indigenous people. Tell us about how you came to do this work and what is the nature of your political work.
Я пришел заниматься политикой.
I came into politics in 1984. The head of the state was Mikhail Gorbachev. At that time, it became a real issue, the creation of a legal basis for the rights of the native peoples in the area or elsewhere. And I had more possibilities of getting into parliament because I knew the lay of the ground, so to speak, and because my readership was becoming my electorate. I would like to say that I participated directly in creation of the three special federal laws. And in the local parliament, during the two times that I spent serving it, 12 local laws were adopted, defending the rights of the local native population. This is especially important in the time when Russia is coming into the market economy system, and we need a legal basis for the defense of the adjustment of the local native peoples. Speaking of my literary activities, I have about 20 books to my credit, which are, some of them at least, are translated into quite a number of languages in Europe. Hungarian, Finnish, Estonian. The last two books are translated into French.
But not English.
My first publications in English came with the help of Dr. Alexander Vashenko in Ohio, and I would specify that it was an issue of North Dakota Quarterly there, which was totally dedicated to the native Siberian writing, and there was a number of pieces by Yeremey Aypin. These days, I'm presenting before the audience here in New Mexico my latest novel, Mother of God in Blood Red Snows. This book was filmed. The film is not finished yet. People will be able to see it by the end of May this year. And it will be the first film about the Hunti people and their culture.
We're going to hear now the prologue to the novel Mother of God in Blood Red Snows by Yeremey Aypin.
Now, I must mention that the local name, previous name for the Hunti people is Ostiaks, which is mentioned here. The Ostiaks endured Soviet power for exactly 17 years. After that, when their despair had become unbearable, they organized an uprising. The final straw came when the Reds desecrated the Holy of Holies, the island in the middle of God's Lake, located in the upper reaches of the River Kazim, where previously no alien foot has trod. And when the Ostiaks rebelled to free their lands from the Reds and to live in accordance with their age-old traditions and customs, their heavenly and earthly gods and goddesses.
I'd like now to introduce Navajo poet Sherwin Bitsui. He is part of this program, Threads of Kinship, Dialogues with Native Siberian Writers. It's great to have you on the air.
It's great to be here.
Tell us what your experience has been like getting to know these Siberian writers.
It's been wonderful and interesting. For me personally, I've been able to locate a sense of connection with these poets, and one that is shared by most indigenous people in the world. So I'm very happy and excited, and I look forward to, you know, discussing more things with them in the future.
How would you describe the nature of that connection between the various indigenous cultures and these two specifically?
I think it's just it's a relationship all indigenous people have in the world. We come from these very old worldviews and perspectives, and we have this connection to the land that isn't so much shared in a very contemporary space. So our discussions are linked in part by that sharing.
It's interesting to share these things across languages.
Yeah, you know, last night we introduced ourselves, and I introduced myself the way I was taught to introduce myself, and they all looked at me and nodded their heads, and it was the same kind of introduction that they do, whereas they named their mothers and their mother's clan and their father's clan and their grandparents' clan. And it's really this beauty of connecting on a deep level that is somehow you're bridging not only continents, but you're bridging time and space.
Would you like to read us one of your poems?
Sure, I'd love to. So I'm going to read from my new book, Flood Song, and it's out on Copper Canyon Press. And it's a book-length poem, and it's a type of song too, but a contemporary song. Let me see, we'll start with page 9. A red-tailed hawk scrapes the sandstone wall with its beak. A shower of sparks skate across the morning sky. You think this bottle will open a canyon wall and light a trail trampled by gloved hands as you inhale earth, wind, water through the gasoline nozzle at trail's end, a flint spear driven into the key switch. You think you can return to that place where your mother held her sleeves above the rising tides, saying, "We are here again, on the road covered with television snow. We are here again. The song has thudded."
Sherwin Bitsui, Navajo poet, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I'd like to introduce now Marina Aipina. She is the daughter of Jerome Aipin, whom we talked to just a moment ago. Welcome.
Thank you.
She is the editor of a newspaper called The Word of the Peoples of the North. Tell us about this newspaper. What issues do you cover and how do you cover them?
Интересно, что мы работаем не только с профессиональными журналистами.
We invite not only professional journalists or authors, but also whoever would like to express their ideas in the newspaper of ours. And we invite both natives and non-natives. One of the constant themes inside of our newspaper is the publication of new laws that were introduced on the defense of the rights of the native peoples of the area.
Give us some examples of some of these laws so we have an idea of what you're talking about.
For example, the latest issue was dedicated to the concept of the long-range stabilized development of the peoples of the North. Starting with the next issue, we are going to publish the concrete measures, steps that are going to be taken by the government in order to make this concept working. Speaking of literature, we publish prose and other areas of creative expression by peoples of the North, natives. And the special place is assigned to the young authors, those who just begin their steps in literature, like, for example, some poetry here that I show you. There is a special part that deals with the latest news from this and of that river, this or that area. And the latest issue was dedicated to our friends all over the world. So here we have photos of Scott Marmaday, and his wife, Susan Scarbury Garcia, and her daughters, Andrew Wiggett, Professor Andrew Wiggett, and his wife. And here we have Raishev, who is a famous hunting artist locally, and Yeremei too.
Who are the readers of this newspaper?
We distribute this newspaper all over the territory of that huge area of Ханты-Мансийск, but also it goes to the guests who come to see us or are related with the area.
Dr. Vashenko, we're talking to all of these people from a part of Siberia. What is the land like where these visiting writers are from?
Siberia is huge, so we are talking about that part of Siberia where our colleagues are from, which is the area along the Ob River that begins in the south and goes all over to the polar ocean. It is the land of lowland, full of water and smaller rivers and creeks, of taiga forest, rich with fish and wild deer as well as domesticated deer, and lots of waterfowl and other kinds of birds that nest in the forest. It is also rich with oil, and therefore we have some conflicts there of interests around that area. Very rich with natural resources there.
Do you have political fights and conflicts between the native people and those who want to develop the oil?
Quite a number of events passed of that nature, the conflicts of interest again, because huge corporations, Russian corporations, move into the territory and harass natural surrounding. The deer die if there are leakages of oil, especially. Anytime winter, all the year round, that has a real negative effect on both the lives of the people or the local flora or fauna.
Thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. We're happy to be here, and we want this connection to continue for the sake of our creation activities on both sides.
We've been talking to Native Siberian and Native American writers. They are part of a project called Threads of Kinship, a cultural exchange sponsored by the Institute of American Indian Arts. For more information, you can go to iaia.edu. And Thursday, April 15th at 7 o'clock, there is a roundtable discussion with Siberian and Native American poets. It's free. We're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we will be at the Santa Fe Baking Company with Eric Blinman, talking about climate change and archaeology of the Southwest. Please stay tuned.